You're listening to Unraveling. This podcast brings together a collection of raw, authentic conversations about the messy truth of life. I'm your host, Lauren Barber, and I have created Unraveling to explore both my own and others' inspiring journeys to reconnect back to themselves. Unraveling is an expression of both the highs and the lows of everyday life and covers a medley of topics inspired by my own adventures, from magical mysticism, mental health and menstruation, to self-expression, co-creation, and personal evolution through movement, meditation and intuitive practices that help us remember and reclaim our true essence. Thank you for tuning in and joining me on this beautiful process of unraveling. Now, let's head to the show. Hi everyone, welcome to episode 25 of Unraveling. This week I am so honoured to be joined by my friend and former coach that I worked with at the beginning of my journey. Well, not the very beginning of my journey, but at the beginning of this little chapter of my journey in terms of when I left my old business and jumped into the well-being world. So I would love to introduce you to Lauren Arms. Lauren has a really great name, obviously. we connected quite a few years ago now when she ran her first well-to-do event in London. And I just was kind of, I was so inspired by the work she was doing and her confidence and the way she presented and just the way she was really determined and focused. And I reached out to her probably a year or maybe 2 years after I originally met her, just to ask her about whether she would consider being my coach. And she agreed. And we worked together for about a year. And she was instrumental in my career and in the building of my business. She gave me so much confidence. So it's just so wonderful to have this conversation with her today and to be able to share it with you. She has so much wisdom and her energy is incredible. She's just got like such a reassuring and confidence-giving energy around her, and I always felt so inspired and motivated to do the work when I had done when I'd had my sessions with her in the past. And you know, this episode is equally inspired me. You know, I feel just from having this conversation with Lauren, I feel inspired again. So I hope you all enjoy it as much as I enjoyed it. So just before we dive in, I'll just tell you a little bit more about Lauren. So Lauren Arms is a business coach, speaker, writer and entrepreneur. She founded Well To Do, a global industry network for the wellness industry, in 2014. Well-to-do is now respected as a definitive voice for the business of wellness, spotlighting innovation and trends, case studies and insights. As a company, Well-to-do helps people to build incredible businesses and careers in the wellness industry through its events, recruitment and coaching services and more. As well as coaching some of the industry's most respected entrepreneurs and influencers, Lauren has also been featured in The Times, Evening Standard, Glamour, Red, Cosmopolitan, Raconteur and Women's Health. Lauren is a force to be reckoned with. Those are my words, not hers, but she really is. And I think if you are thinking about changing career, or you already work in the wellness world, or you want to work in the wellness world, or if you just want to start your own business, it doesn't even have to be in the well-being industry, this episode is going to give you so much confidence and inspiration and loads of nuggets. And we talk about everything to do with mindset, and money is a big thing that we talk about in this episode. And it's certainly opened up a lot of things for me in having these conversations. So I hope you will get as much expansion and inspiration as I did. So here we go. Hi, Lauren. It's so lovely to have you on Unraveling today. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. I'm going to go straight into my first question for you to kick off the conversation. And that is, what messy truth are you currently unraveling in your life today?
Oh, geez, that started out with a tough one, Lauren. Really throwing me in the deep end. I love it. Well, one of my themes for the year was around working less and making more money. And on the surface, that probably sounds quite unemotional, but it was for me a really important goal that I tackled this year because as I've been building my business over the last 4.5 years, as you know, you kind of go on this really wild personal development journey. And one of the stories that I wanted to unravel was this idea that hard work equals success, this idea that making money is has to be difficult, and that building a business means kind of drilling yourself into the ground. And that's a story for me that's come from, a really young age of being, little miss, A-type personality, really ambitious, really hard on myself, setting really high expectations for myself, and ultimately, over the years, really nurturing that inner critic voice. So I kind of came into 2018 with this desire to, challenge the idea that you have to work insanely hard in order to not just make money, but build a commercially successful business. And I wanted to challenge that because the idea for me of working myself into the ground and exhausting myself and reaching a stage of burnout wasn't on my checklist of success criteria. So, over the year, I've really been getting honest with myself about, or checking in with myself when I am working long days or long hours. Because I've put that pressure or expectation on myself that I have to do that in order to achieve success. And the more conscious I've become of it, the more often I'm catching myself out, and then I'm able to, put practical, I guess, boundaries in place to stop that from happening. So, for example, today is Monday. I have a rule, and I think I shared this with you when we were working together, that I start Mondays at 10:30, and it's a real gift that I give myself. Because building your own business is hard enough, and I don't want to feel like I have to wake up on a Monday morning like I did when I was in my corporate job and go full throttle right from the get-go. So, I've been taking Monday mornings to really do something that I enjoy and something that doesn't feel like a natural association to that idea of, work really hard in order to succeed. So, like this morning, I went and had a tennis lesson, and it's such a luxury, and it's still. There's still that little voice that's like, you're not supposed to be doing this on a Monday morning. And actually, I find that when I start the day, I'm much more productive and I feel like I'm enjoying my work and I'm achieving the same outcomes because I'm more focused in a shorter period of time. And that actually, working those longer hours was actually just tiring me out and not necessarily, ensuring that I was achieving all of the goals that I'd set for myself. So it's, it's an ongoing process. It's an ongoing journey of really kind of breaking down that belief.
I resonate with that so much, and it's definitely something that I've also been trying to unravel. And it's as you said, it's a really slow process, I think. It's not something you've been conditioned to kind of work in a certain way for so long, especially if you've come out of a corporate job or worked, within that 9 to 5 time constraint. I'm really challenging that at the moment, and sort of my like part of me is still very much stuck in that. Okay, like you said, it's 9 o'clock and I'm not sitting at my desk. I should be. But the other part of me knows that my natural rhythms don't work in a 9 to 5 cycle, and actually they don't work the same each week. So some weeks I could work 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. and get so much done. And then other weeks I need to lie until 8 o'clock because I'm tired and I could work better in the afternoon. So it's like actually getting a little bit more in sync with your own cycles and rhythms and working to that rather than trying to constrain yourself into a set time period.
Yeah, for sure. And also, For anyone listening who has started their own business, which I imagine you attract a real audience of those types, there's got to be an upside to the effort and the, you know, the challenges that come with building a business. And if you're not giving yourself or kind of gifting yourself that upside, like flexibility or, you know, another great example is my fiance Jamie and I went into London yesterday to do some Christmas shopping, and we kind of lasted about an hour and then turned around and came home. And I was like, why are we going to the center of London city on a Sunday with everybody else when we have the flexibility to just, you know, maybe go on a Tuesday morning and enjoy it? And I hate big crowds. I hate being, you know, in a sardine tin in the store. And it's like, if we can't give ourselves permission to really enjoy the freedom, which most of us are pursuing as business owners, that's what we want. That's what we're craving when we kind of leave that corporate infrastructure. And yet we don't give ourselves permission to fully embrace it. So you've kind of got to catch yourself and realize that you can make better decisions to support your pursuit of that freedom. And instead of kind of getting in your own way and sabotaging that process, which, you know, we often find ourselves doing as well.
Yeah. And I think the word that you used a couple of times there, which really stands out to me and is something that I've been kind of working with, is that permission. It's like if you've worked in a more kind of conventional 9-to-5, shall we say, or you've been employed, you almost do have to wait for permission to be told you can take an extra like lengthy lunch break or go on holiday, you know, like all these things. And actually it's kind of when you become that person that's giving yourself permission, then that also brings up things like guilt or, you know, maybe shame that you're not working hard enough. I've been really unraveling this kind of concept that if I'm not working a million hours of every day, that it means I'm lazy. This kind of, and it's like one of the worst things for me to feel would be to feel lazy, because I don't want to be kind of seen as a lazy person. So it's like, it's just noticing, and as you say, catching yourself, and then maybe shifting. But how would you say, like, when you do become aware of that, because it all starts with that awareness, isn't it? Noticing that you're kind of going down the same pattern or same route that you have done previously. How do you, when you catch yourself, how do you work with that inner critic to sort of quieten the voice down compassionately? Obviously, we don't want to be really, you know, don't want to kind of hit the inner critic with more criticism, but that to sort of to shift out of that. Do you find, is there any practices you've found useful?
Yeah, I try and kind of tap into this idea of curiosity. So my curious and inquiring voice says, you know, whose voice is this actually? When I hear that kind of, oh, you're being lazy, or you're not being productive enough, or you should have started the day earlier, you should have gotten out of bed earlier, or, you know, successful people start the day at 5 a.m. with hot water and lemon or whatever, and, you know, that wasn't you today. Then I get curious and I'm like, I'm asking myself, is that my voice, or is that, you know, a story that has come from somewhere else? And by and large, I'm seeing that actually it's a voice that's come from, you know, 8-10 years of working in the corporate world, and the expectation that you learn from that, the assumption that society generally holds that, you know, we need to work to that pattern that you talked about, a probably pattern that's come from, you know, growing up with parents who worked in conventional jobs. My parents were both teachers. My dad worked extremely hard, and I always got a sense that his kind of true pattern was that particular career, probably in something more creative. And so, you know, I kind of learned from a young age that this is sort of how you do work, and work is not meant to be fun. It's supposed to make you money and earn you a living and so on. And so that curiousness sort of indicates to me that, and I find that I can be less critical of myself, because it's not really me speaking. It's this voice that comes from a pattern or a habit or a blueprint that I've learned elsewhere, that's just been habitually spinning and on cycle, on repeat, like that little hamster wheel, and has become a habit, a pattern of thought. And I'm less critical of myself when I realize that, because I guess you find in that sort of conversation with yourself, that internal dialogue, a greater sense of compassion, that there's a reason that you're fighting against this inner dialogue, that there's a reason that, you know, that feels contradictory sometimes, that you want to do one thing, but actually you do another. And I think once you can rationalize that and almost normalize it, like, okay, yeah, it makes sense that I think this way, because in a way I've been conditioned to think this way. So I'm just going to get curious about what would happen if I did things differently one day. So, you know, the first day that I started Mondays at 10:30 felt really weird, really unnatural. And, you know, wasn't necessarily the most enjoyable Monday morning, but it got easier because I started to kind of break that pattern. And I think it really is curiousness, compassion, and really understanding how your inner dialogue works and where it comes from. And with that understanding, I think it becomes easier to change, because you realize that, you know, the perception that you have of a situation is really up to you to choose. And the thoughts and emotions that you attach to that situation are really up to you to choose. And that's where you recognize that that personal choice really does exist.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's that the choice, and we do always have a choice as to how we react to something. And again, that comes down quite often, we react habitually and through a pattern, but I guess it all comes down to awareness at the end of the day, and just being so self-aware of things, and the way we respond to things, and I guess just almost reclaiming that power that we do have, you know, the opportunity to choose something different at any given time, if we, you know, if we actually kind of get our own way.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not easy to face that inner dialogue. And, you know, most of us put it off. And it's why, as much as I love journaling, as much as I love kind of sitting with my thoughts, you know, embracing meditative practices, it can also be very confronting. And so we talk about self-awareness, but actually with self-awareness comes a certain level of pain and a certain level of discomfort. And it sucks sometimes to have to listen to some of the crazy voices in your head and feel like, you know, is this really what's going on repeat in my mind all day, every day? I remember a business coach asked me to do an exercise, and it was to literally write down as many of the thoughts that you could catch in a day. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to do that. Like, that's silly for starters. And how would you even do that? And she sort of said, like, just give it a go. And you can practice this habit, if you're listening. I did it with a little notebook and a pen and just kind of carried it around for the day and just caught thoughts that were coming up in my mind. Or, you know, she said you can use a voice memo app on your phone. And when you do that for kind of 24, 48 hours, you end up with this long list of just random thoughts that come into your mind. And most of them are critical. Most of them are a judgment on yourself, an assumption about someone thinking something about you. And if you read through that list and you realize that most of those thoughts are pointing your life in a certain direction that you don't feel in alignment with, that's when, as painful as it is, you start to confront those thoughts and start to flip them on their head and make that conscious decision that, even though it might not feel real for you initially, you're going to consciously choose to think in different ways.
Yeah, that sounds like a really powerful exercise. I definitely
a challenging one.
Yeah, very challenging, because I can't remember, I don't know the exact numbers, but there are literally, like, we have thousands and thousands of thoughts every single day, don't we? I've read somewhere, I can't remember how many it is, but it's just crazy amounts of thoughts, and most of it is probably, you know, as you say, it's, if those thoughts are pointing us in a certain direction, it's no wonder that we find it hard to get unstuck or to shift into a different thought pattern. And so many of it is completely in our subconscious, and we don't even realize we're having those thoughts, and unless you actually take the time to write them down, you're not going to get that awareness. So yeah,
for sure. And, you know, also those thoughts are taking you in a certain trajectory because your actions are going to reflect those thoughts. So, you know, if I'm thinking right now, or if I catch myself thinking, You know, what I'm saying is not interesting. What I'm saying is not going to resonate with Lauren's audience. You know, this is not going to be a great podcast. You know, people aren't going to like me, whatever. Then I'm going to retreat into myself and I'm not going to say the valuable things that I want to say and feel confident in the message that I want to share with you just in this conversation. And so it's like when those thoughts are on repeat, all of the evidence that you're gathering is reflective of, and the action that you're taking is reflective of those beliefs as well. And it's why those exercises, as uncomfortable as they are so important for you to have that foundational level of understanding of where you're at right now. And not to be critical of yourself, not in any sort of sense of judgment, just to check in and see, like, where are my thoughts right now? Are they positive? Are they driving me forward in the direction of the things that I want to achieve? Or are they hindering me? Are they keeping me hidden? Are they keeping me, you know, I guess, not shining my light and not sharing my message in the world?
I love the idea of them becoming your evidence, and they do kind of back up perhaps, you know, like you're constantly reaffirming a certain belief or a certain pattern, and actually if you changed the evidence then yeah, imagine what you could do. And you know, you can find evidence to actually make it so that you are confident that you're sharing an interesting message or whatever it might be. I love the idea of kind of this collecting evidence through the day. And
yeah me too.
So I would love to just share, or for you to share a little bit more about your journey to getting to where you are now, because I know that, you know, you were saying about being in the corporate world, and now obviously you are, can you explain exactly what you're doing and where you're at right now with your entrepreneurial journey?
For sure. So I moved from Australia to the UK 5.5 years ago, and I moved thinking that I wanted to pursue this sort of corporate life. For me, the markers of success were earning a good salary, being on an upward trajectory within an organization, you know, being in a position where I was climbing the corporate ladder. For me, having, you know, a busy day of meetings or having, you know, the latest BlackBerry, they were, you know, what made me feel like I was really important and what I thought was my measure of success. And moving to London, I didn't have a lot to lose by being here. So I was also in a mindset of I'm willing to try different things. But in doing so, I kind of found myself in working in a job that ultimately wasn't fulfilling. And it's a bit of a cliche, but sitting at my desk 9 to 5, wondering whether this was what my life was going to be. And starting to listen to that little voice that said, you know, you're meant for something more than this. So I guess as anyone thinking about starting a business does, you start to tap into what you're passionate about. You start to think about what really interests you, what really frustrates you, what a sort of problem is that you feel, you know, that potentially you could solve. And a little part of me was thinking, you know, I want to explore this entrepreneurship thing. I've got a 2-year visa in the UK, nothing to lose. And so on the side of my 9-to-5 job, I guess the side hustle you'd call it these days, I started writing about something that I felt passionate about, and that was wellness. And having grown up in Australia, wellness was sort of an inherent part of my lifestyle. But coming to the UK, I realized that there was a bit more of a refined or defined marketplace here for wellness brands. And so I started a blog. I set up a really sort of dodgy, average looking WordPress website. I remember I opened up Microsoft Paint at my desk in my corporate job, and I created a logo that was, you know, definitely not perfect. And I remember thinking, you know, I want to put this thing out into the world, but feeling so nervous, sort of, I guess, turning it into quite a big deal in my mind. And I remember the day that I pressed publish blog and actually realized that it was a massive anticlimax, that there was, you know, zero traffic, nobody knew about it. And actually that was just the beginning. So I think the hardest part sometimes is launching. And I remember that pressure that had mounted around kind of launching something, putting something out into the world. And actually, that's just the starting point. So I just started writing 2 or 3 articles a week about, you know, what was going on in the wellness industry in London. and writing about new businesses, new, you know, stores or studios or products launching in that wellness category. And it sort of evolved from there. It was probably not six or seven months later that I quit my corporate job. And I didn't quit it because I had this thriving business that, you know, couldn't handle not having my time or focus. It was that I just knew I couldn't stay in that job. And actually, I'd gotten to a point where I felt guilty. I felt guilty that I wasn't giving my full energy to that business. And I felt like it was wrong for me to stay there when I really felt like my energy and my passion was meant to be somewhere else. So I kind of took that leap of faith, not having really any savings, not having any clear idea of what my business plan would be, having a couple of really small sources of income from the business, and just willing to take that leap and figure it out as I went along, really.
I love that. And I remember when we worked together, you said to me, just make the crap version. Like, that's one thing that's always stuck with me, is like when you're kind of in that procrastination time of like wanting to start something but not having it perfect, and you were just like, just make the like the first version, because it's always going to evolve. And I guess that's exactly what you had the courage to do, and then let it evolve from there. So from how, you know, just going back to that point where you obviously handed in your notice and you, you know, you made that decision, for some people that's, you know, like unthinkable to do that at that point when you haven't got that kind of stability already in place. Like, how, obviously I think it works differently for different people. I personally am similar to you in that I had to just leap. I had to take that leap and kind of work it out afterwards. But I know that's not everybody's path. So if someone is sitting there listening now thinking, like, I want 2019 to be the year that I do make that shift, that change, what would be your advice now, looking back to when you did it?
I think that you pretty quickly realize that there are going to be some sacrifices that you need to make. And I think once you accept that there is going to be sacrifice, you can start to really drill into what you're afraid of. And inevitably, most of us are afraid of failure. Most of us really know deep down that even if the worst case scenario, you know, came to be, that we would still be okay. Fundamentally, we're afraid of failure, rejection, and, you know, and wanting to survive. So for me, I did have to give up a lot, and I'll admit that, because I'm not in the business of selling false dreams to people, but I am, you know, I am honest about what I had to give up in order to make my business a success. And that included things like, you know, going out with my friends multiple nights a week. It meant giving up the luxury of living in, you know, a nice apartment in central London, and actually having to go and live with Jamie's parents in Surrey, which was so not glamorous. And if I'm honest, I do really remember feeling quite ashamed about that, because it suddenly looked like I was failing, because my success markers to that point had been, as I said before, having a successful job in the city, having a stable salary. And when you build a business, the truth is you give up all of that security for the long-term gain. So with long-term gain is usually a short-term pain. And for me, that was, yeah, not having my own place, not being able to go and just splash 100 quid in Whole Foods if I wanted to. I didn't buy myself new clothes for a year. I didn't go and have my hair cut in fancy salons anymore. And I do remember kind of going like a year without getting my hair cut. And at the same time, I kind of recognized that those were the sacrifices that I need to make. And I think the hard truth is that if you're not willing to give up some of the comforts of your life right now, then you're probably not in the business of being an entrepreneur. Because, you know, being an entrepreneur means taking risks. It means taking a chance on yourself. It means, you know, really thinking about what you're most afraid of and moving towards that rather than away from it, which is so counterintuitive for most people. And kind of finding comfort in that discomfort, which we hear talked about so much. But actually, when you're in it, it's like, this feels uncomfortable, this is scary, this is not what I, you know, this is not how I want to be feeling, this is not my, we want to protect ourselves, and naturally we want to retreat to that kind of familiarity of whatever security looks like for you right now. So I guess it's normalizing that there's going to be fear involved in this process. And it's normalizing that, you know, there are going to have to be sacrifices. And Tim Ferriss has this great TED talk where he talks about fear setting, where we actually define like what our worst fears actually are. And once you know what they are, then you can kind of come to terms with what would actually happen if those fears became a reality. And I've heard him speak too about, you know, a friend of his whose worst fear was that he would have to eat oatmeal every day. You know, that he wouldn't be able to afford to buy himself nice food. And so he actively pursued that. He actively ate oatmeal every day for a fixed period of time. And at the end of that was like, I'm okay. You know, like I've survived. This is, you know, this is actually not as, maybe not as bad as I thought it would be, or it actually is something that I can get through. So it's almost like facing those fears head on, actively pursuing them rather than avoiding it, and in avoiding it you typically just stay where you are.
Yeah, so I guess there's always gonna be fear, but in order to grow then we kind of have to go through that. I'm definitely learning that myself at the moment, in that I feel like the last few years I have been like scared quite a lot of the time. But each time I do something that fills me with a bit of fear, and I have the confidence to get through it, then I feel like I'm strengthening that muscle, that kind of resilience muscle, and that ability to step out of my comfort zone. And without that, there is no way that I would be at the point I'm at, and I wouldn't have grown and transformed so much in such a few, you know, a short period of time, really. So it's, I think, yeah, it's just that it's taking a lot of leaps.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a trust element to that too. So there's a beautiful book that I'd recommend to anybody listening, thinking about, you know, starting a business or wanting to evolve an idea. And that's The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. I don't know if you've read it, Lauren, but yeah. One of the quotes that she shares at the start of the book is, leap and the net will appear. Mm. And it's so, again, counterintuitive to what we know, because in life most people leap when they know the net is already there, and to leap without knowing whether it will or won't appear is really what building business is all about. It's taking a risk before you know that the return is already there. It's taking a leap because, you know, you're affirming this belief that things will work out for you, even if it means making a mistake, even if it means, you know, that you go one way and that's not right and you have to pivot and come back again. And again, believe me, for anyone listening, you know, my business is not now what I thought it would be when I launched it 4 years ago. In fact, it's almost not recognizable. The name's the same, but that's kind of about it. Any plan that I had 4 years ago has evolved based on listening, trusting, backed off, giving myself those opportunities to be brave, to build resilience, and to do all those things that you talked about too, Lauren, which is, yeah, really incredibly inspiring for anybody listening, that you have been able to trust yourself to make those difficult decisions even when you didn't know what the outcome would be.
I mean, and I think one of the keys to having that trust and to growing and making leaps is actually the support network I've had around me, and I think that's probably one of the things I'd say, you know, before you go into this, like, it's really important to have, it might just be one person, it doesn't have to be you know, a huge community, but just having one person that you know, you just know believes in you, which is why I, you know, why it was amazing when I kind of first started out that I worked with you as a coach, because you were like, you know, I had lots of people that were supporting me, but to have that one person that kind of was there to say, no, you can take this leap. You know, I've kind of got your hand, you're doing it on your own, but I've kind of got your hand here. And that's, I guess, where I think possibly where people maybe don't, like, the process is harder than it needs to be, because they feel like they have to do it all on their own. And I certainly did at the beginning. I thought, I have to be independent. I have to do this on my own. And if I don't, then that's a failure. But as soon as I started to ask for support and actually, you know, open my hand and say, okay, I accept some help, it totally transformed things.
Yeah. And it was, you know, believe me, the exact same journey for me. I thought that I had to figure it all out on my own, and that was a good sign of a clever entrepreneur, someone who's able to solve problems. And, you know, I guess because we hear these stories about self-made success stories or self-made millionaires or whatever else, this concept of self-made is a bit of a paradox, because, you know, I think most successful people would attribute their success to the support network that they've had, as you said, or someone that showed them how to do things more efficiently, or, you know, having learned from someone who'd already done what you wanted to do. And I guess another interesting layer to that is that most of us, when we're starting out, kind of look at other success stories, and instead of affirming that that's possible for us, we sort of think, well, we kind of immediately go into, well, I don't have that skill set or that experience, or I'm not as good looking as her or as thin as her, or you know, I don't have the right contacts or whatever else, all of these kind of limiting beliefs. And I remember the first business coach I ever worked with actually triggered a lot of that in me. I looked at her online presence, I looked at her website, and I said, well, it's easy for her. She's got a great website, she's got Instagram followers, she knows what she's doing. And when I really got honest with myself, the reason that it was triggering me so much is because I wanted what she had. And one of the things that resonated with me about her message was that she said in her communication online, the reason that I'm sharing my successes with you and sharing my story with you is because I want to show you what is possible. And I think that it's really important to see what triggers you and to really explore what triggers you when you're thinking about the type of business or life that you want to create. And if something like that triggers that feeling of, well, I could never be that, to flip that on its head and say, you know, actually, thank you to that person. I'm so grateful for you for showing me what is possible. Then we start to take those steps and take action that supports that belief, rather than, I guess, staying in that limiting belief or that upper limit that says you have to stay right here where you are and let those other people around you achieve success. And yeah, they're the two different directions that you can take. And I think, you know, most of us know which direction it is that we really want.
Yeah, I love that. And that, again, that's something that's really stuck with me from when I worked with you, is this idea of just like befriending envy rather than actually seeing it as something that's like showing you what you don't have. It's actually just showing you what you could have. And then it's down to, you know, it's down to you, you know, as the individual, to make the choice as to whether you're going to let that, you know, to step up to it, I suppose. You know, that's kind of it's the gentle butt kicking that we need. And I really, every time I see someone online doing something that I think, oh, I really want to do that, and you get that kind of feeling of, first of all, the instant thing is, oh, I'm not, like, I don't have that. But instead of saying, like, instantly now, I just switch to, well, she's showing me what's possible, or he's showing me what's possible. Mm. And that's been a huge shift for me. That really definitely, like, I'm just I'm saying all these things and I'm remembering all the stuff we worked together with. And it's just, it's interesting how it's become so ingrained in me.
I think really, like, for anyone listening, if you want to even take what even just reaching out to that person and saying, like, thank you so much for the work that you do and for showing me what's possible, it's a really practical way of, again, affirming that and saying, yeah, instead of harboring a jealousy around what that person has created, really expressing a gratitude that if it exists, if that level of success or that creativity or that idea exists in the world, then it's possible for you as well. And it's the same with making money. You know, I used to harbor a belief that everyone I saw driving a really nice car or living in a house that I liked, I'd envy them, I'd be jealous, I'd be feeling like I can't have that. and you've got some special gift or secret ingredient that I don't have to be able to have those luxuries. And now, you know, when I see someone driving a nice car, I'm like really happy for them. I really express my gratitude that that's possible, that that's accessible, and that, you know, that there's something there that is there for me to have as well, if I desire it, if I truly desire it.
Yeah, and sometimes the things that we think we desire are actually maybe like attached to an old belief anyway, you know, like for example, for some people, the flashy car or the the expensive hair appointments or something, they might be what they used to define as success because it was based on what society told us was success. But actually, when you dive deeper into that, you might realize that that's not actually aligned with you anyway, and that might be why it's triggering. I think sometimes I always look at things, and sometimes when things trigger me, I question, is this triggering me because it's not aligned with me, or is it triggering me because it's actually what I want? And then to sort of take some time and go into that is really interesting what comes up often.
Yeah, there's a lesson to be learned.
always a lesson to be learned. Just going on to it's kind of in relation to what you were saying earlier about this belief about working hard to be successful and this sort of what success looked like to you originally. I personally have like worked on this belief of like needing to work lots of hours in order to get money. And like there's this kind of for me at this moment in time, something I'm unraveling is this belief that for me to make money, it means I have to burn myself out by working all the hours of all the days of, you know, like all my weekends, and I can't possibly have this free, liberated, flexible life and earn money and earn the money that I want. So it sort of led me to almost sacrifice the money so that I could have the freedom. But it's working on bringing those, and I think a lot of people I speak to at the moment are in a similar place. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on how to start to bring that back into, or how to start believing that it's actually possible to earn money and have the flexibility and not completely exhaust yourself in the process.
Yeah. So it starts with understanding the types of income that are possible for you to earn. And there are two main types, and one requires you to exchange time for money, and one is more passive. So you've got kind of direct income from work that you do, or you've got passive or residual income from work that you do once and you're able to cash in on multiple times in addition to that initial work that you've done. And the more that I started to understand that type of income, in addition to really exploring my belief systems around money, what I realized is that there are lots of really clever people out in the world who perhaps don't have huge Instagram followings, perhaps aren't, you know, celebrities, who aren't well known to us, who have really successful businesses that make money without having to be a slave to your business. And that inspired me. If I'm really honest about my value and the life that I want to create, I know that I don't want to work crazy long weeks. I actually don't enjoy sitting at a computer that much. I like doing it to a certain extent and to achieve some of my goals, but I'd much rather be, you know, traveling or spending time with my family or having lunch with my friends or playing tennis or whatever it might be. So that drove me really to find out what really smart, high-performing business people do to make money with less effort. And passive income for me, my business, if I can share some of that practical aspect to it, are things like courses. So this year, we created our first World to Do Careers course. It's an 8-week online learning experience, and it's, 8 modules of content that we've created with live experts. And we run that program on repeat 3 times a year. So that's an example of passive income, because we created the course once, and now when we sell the course, we've already created all of the content and we're making money from something that we've already done the work for. So when I wake up in the morning and we've had, you know, 5 enrollments in the course, that's money that we've earned without having to do any work. So you can start to see that there are ways that you can make money without having to work for it. And the more that you can understand that, and the more that you can research business models that use that strategy, then the more, again, you can see this, you can embrace this concept of that is possible for me as well. You know, I can see that there's a strategy there, and I can, you know, I can start to explore ways to replicate that. So another way that we do that in our business is that in September, we wrote a report about the wellness industry and some of the trends that we see for 2019. And we created that as a PDF. And now you can download and purchase that from our website for £150. And every time we sell a report, I'm so grateful that it's less work that I have to do and more money just flowing into my business. And I'm affirming that, you know, there's plenty more where that came from. I always have enough money for all of my desires, all of these positive money affirmations. I'm checking my bank balance, which lots of us don't do. I'm developing a positive relationship with money. I'm excited about making money. I'm seeing what difference that money is making in my life and enabling me to build a bigger team and to achieve more of my goals. So it's all of this sort of positive belief system supported by positive action. And you can't have one without the other. You can have a great money-making strategy and have a belief that there's not enough for you. And you can have an abundant mindset and not have passive income streams in your business. So you're going to just, even though you've got positive money beliefs, you're going to fall back into that cycle of working long hours in order to get that return. So does that make sense? It's sort of both of those components. And there's a practical understanding of the ways that you can make money and work less, but there's also a belief that starts with, you know, like I said, my mantra for 2018 was work less, make more money.
Yeah, some subconscious stuff going on there. Yeah, no, I love all of that. And I think what I'm realizing at the moment is, and I've been doing a lot of work on this myself as well, is that there's a lot of shame around talking about money as a, you know, in the first instance. And there's this almost a shame, especially in the well-being world, in certain, you know, especially more so the spiritual well-being world, there's a lot of belief that it's bad to want money or to even like talk about money. There's so much shame around it. So I'm really interested to spark up that conversation about money a bit more. It's kind of, I think the two things that people are most ashamed of talking about, I read this the other day, is money and sex. So the two things. So I feel like we need to talk about money and sex a lot more.
Totally. And I mean, how relevant are both of those things in our lives? Like, they're the things that we most often like want more of, but are afraid to talk about. And there's such a paradox around that. So I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. Are there any, I know you recommended to me a few really useful resources in terms of how to work with your money mindset. What are your sort of top resources at the moment for helping?
Yeah, sure. So one of my absolute favorite books at the moment, which I'm sure you've read, Lauren, is the Jen Sincero book, You're a Badass at Making Money. Yeah. I highly recommend it because it takes a really fun, funny, joyous approach to this conversation about money, which we do find awkward. And for anyone listening that does feel particularly triggered when we talk about making money, being wealthy, being rich, you know, bringing cash into your life, those words generally have an associated trigger or, you know, either a positive or not necessarily a negative, but a limited view around them or a limited feeling. And so the work that I've done on my own money story it generally starts with understanding what your blueprint is around money. So for clients that I work with as a business coach, I will ask, you know, what's your blueprint around money? What's your belief system? And some people have never thought about that before. Some people have thought about it, but, you know, maybe need to review it because it's like a muscle. You've got to work it out. You've got to keep growing. And as you get to new levels in your business, there'll be new challenges and new limiting beliefs that come up around money. And one of the really great exercises that Jen suggests in her book is to write a letter to money. And I love that, because if you can sit down and think about money as a person in your life and think about the relationship that you have with money and write a letter to that kind of persona, it will bring up a lot. And, you know, you might find yourself writing things like, you know, it will start with dear money, and it'll be things like, you know, I want more of you in my life, but I feel ashamed to admit that. I feel resentful towards you. I wish that you were easier to pin down. It feels like, you know, when I get you in my life, you're always just disappearing, or I feel like, you know, as soon as we get close, you disappear again. It's all of these sort of, you know, personified characteristics of our relationship with money that we need to get honest about. And it's the same with that awareness that you talked about before, Lauren, with any aspect of your life. And if we can start to nurture a relationship with money, spend time with money, sit down with our numbers and actually think about what's going on and get close to those belief systems, then we can really start to make some changes. And those changes for me have really evolved into a lot more abundance, a lot more, I guess, comfortability around talking about money, a lot more excitement about making money and difference that means that I can make on the world and my family and my life right now. You know, I'm driven to make money so that I can look after my parents when they get older, or, you know, have security around having children, or buy a nice house, or employ more people in my business. And we don't need to feel bad about all of those things. They're really wonderful things, and how privileged we are as a society, and probably those people listening, to have access to that abundance and to have access to the internet, where we can build a business and create wealth for ourselves. That is a really positive thing and not something to be ashamed about.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think asking the questions, and I love the idea of writing the letter. And I have got that book on my Kindle and I never read it. And I've just ordered it, actually it arrived yesterday from Amazon's, because I just find myself resisting reading on the Kindle for some reason. So I'm reading it. But another one I found really useful was Money, a Love Story. Because it just kind of brought it into a slightly softer, at that point I needed a more soft approach. Whereas now I'm like, no, screw this. I'm going for it. And just admitting to myself is like, actually, I love money. You know, like, I love money because it gives me so much. It gives me freedom. I'm not saying that money solves everything at all. And I think that's a belief that, like, that's one of those things that people kind of think, you know, money doesn't buy you happiness, but it does buy you liberation and the chance to be flexible and live a life that makes you happy.
Yeah, totally. And it's, and also, you know, if you read books like How Rich People Think by Steve Seabold, it's a brilliant one. And you start to read about why society has developed that belief that money doesn't make you happy. And it's because if we all go around affirming that belief, then we're not going to strive for anything more than what we've got. When actually all we're craving for is to expand, to have more freedom, to have more abundance. And we're suppressing that down with the belief that, oh, money won't buy you happiness. And my brother always says, and it makes me laugh so much, money can't buy you happiness, but have you ever seen a sad person on a ski? And like, you know, telling ourselves money won't buy us happiness, when actually lots of the things that we love doing cost money. And that's just the truth of it. Whether it's, you know, I don't know, going and taking your kids to see Santa, or going to the grocery store to buy a meal to cook for your family. Like, all of those lovely things about living life in a joyous way do cost money. It's just the reality of life. We don't need to hide or shy away from that fact. Let's embrace it. Or giving to charity, like, those things require money. And instead of staying in this stuck mindset of, well, I won't be happy if I have money anyway, it's kind of breaking that down and I guess affirming the belief that, of course, you know, your happiness is derived from within, and that there are people who have money that aren't truly happy, but that there are also people without money that aren't truly happy. So it's not about the money, It's about what you could do with money if you had it in your life to enhance who you are as a person. So, you know, there's lots of layers to it, and it's a really powerful process when you start to unravel those layers and see what's going on underneath that's keeping you stuck and keeping you afraid of having that honest conversation with yourself about money.
Yeah, and just the realization and sort of just admit, you know, like money isn't this dirty word that we should all shy away from, and actually, you know, talking about it, being open about it, and just even just acknowledging like your debts or acknowledging that where you're at with your money is like, it can be really scary to do that, but it's actually a really powerful exercise, and it kind of opens up the channels, I guess, to clearing the beliefs and to welcoming more money into your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you do that, crazy magical things happen.
Yes. Believing in magic always. Okay. So I think we could talk about money a lot, but I just want to invite you to share a little bit more about like where you're at with well-to-do at the moment and, you know, what's coming up for you at the moment in terms of your business.
Sure. So I am building a business, as you say, it's called Well To Do. And our mission really is to help people to build incredible businesses and careers in the wellness industry. So we next year have really exciting plans to expand our events and to turn them into bigger, better events. We're launching a podcast, which is still kind of under production. And that'll be great interviews with successful entrepreneurs in the wellness industry. I'm continuing to support clients one-on-one in a business coaching capacity. So if that's something that resonates with anybody listening, I'd love to hear from you. We are working really hard on developing a platform to help people who might not be ready to take that leap into entrepreneurship, but want to work for an incredible brand in the wellness industry. So we advertise jobs for companies like Lululemon or Equinox or Peloton or some of these great brands in fitness, food and drink, beauty, travel within the wellness sector. And as I mentioned before, we also run an amazing 8-week online course that helps you to understand what it is that you're really passionate about and what type of career in the wellness industry would really resonate with you. So we meet a lot of people who say, I'd love to work in wellness, but I've got no idea where to start. And so we kind of bundled all of our knowledge and insight into the process that you can go through to get clarity, to, you know, get the skills and tools that you need to find a job that you love and then ultimately to kind of get that job as well. So we have a lot going on next year and all really exciting stuff and all things that I would never really have imagined would be part of my business model, but have been a really natural response to what our audience have asked us for. So it feels like we're really serving a community and really responding to quite real needs that people have for us to help them solve problems that they experience in their everyday.
Love it. And where can people find you?
So well-to-do is well-to-do-global.com and all of the associated social media channels. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in coaching, then that's via my personal website, which is Lauren Arms, which is ARMES.co, because the bloody .com was taken.
Same here. Ah. I'm .co. I'm so I think we should, it's .co is like the new .com anyway. So
totally love it. So yes, LaurenArms.co.
Excellent. Okay. And I'll put all the links in the show notes anyway. I just have one last question for you before we wrap up. And it's a question I ask all my guests. And the question is, what are you remembering now that you had previously forgotten?
To have more fun in my business and just to have more fun in my life, really. I think it's so important when you're building a business to not take yourself or the process so seriously and actually have some fun. And I'm doing the same with exercise and with, you know, my family and my friends. And so I mentioned that I had a tennis lesson this morning. I played tennis when I was a little kid and I remember how fun it was. And I don't remember exercise ever being hard until you get to that age where you're like, oh, it's so serious. You know, I've got to have a workout plan and this, that, and the other. And I was like, actually, I just want to do something that is fun and makes me feel like I'm growing. So yeah, I've started having tennis lessons on a Monday morning, which is really sparking that kind of little inner child in me again. So I think for a while there, I thought building a business had to be super serious. And I'm reminding myself that actually we can just have fun with it and enjoy the process.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing to remember. And I think it's easy to fall into the serious trap. But, you know, just laughing more, having more fun, playing, not taking things so seriously. And that does make the journey and the harder parts of the journey a little bit lighter, I think. So, yeah, I love
that. And one of my friends who runs an athleisure brand says that she often reminds herself, we're not saving lives here. We're just, you know, building a business. And unless you actually have a business that saves lives, which is amazing, most of us are actually just doing something that should be a lot more fun than serious.
Yeah, I love that. Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today and for unraveling with me.
Pleasure. Thank you. I love everything that you're doing. So keep doing that. Keep giving that gift.
Thank you. And yeah, you have been a huge part of this journey. And I'm very grateful for that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Unraveling. If you have enjoyed this conversation and want to listen more, then please subscribe to the show and share it with any friends who might enjoy the journey too. To continue the adventures and connect with other people who are also enjoying the show, don't forget to join the Unraveling Deeper community on Facebook. Here you can delve deeper into some of the topics discussed on the show and also get the chance to ask questions for future episodes. I will also be sharing additional resources that are supporting me in my own unraveling. Just head to facebook.com/groups/unraveling deeper. You can also get in touch with me via my Instagram at laurenbarber.co or through my website www.laurenbarber.co. Until next time, keep trusting the beautifully chaotic process of unraveling.